Welcome to The Upshot, Multi-World Disc Golf's podcast about the latest in the disc golf world. I'm the publisher, Charlie Eisenhood. Joining me is Jamie Thomas. It's 2021. It's a new year. We have a much more optimistic outlook on the year. Not that 2020 was all that bad for disc golf, let's be honest, but just in the general sense, I'm glad it's a new year, Jamie. It was nice to watch the ball drop and say, okay, 2020 is done.
Yeah, it's there's certainly a lot of optimism in the air, which feels really good because it was a weird holiday season. Not to start the year off on a vibe like that, but it was a strange holiday season for me. It was a good holiday season. I don't want to. It was good, and I enjoyed spending time with my wife and my son. But you know, not having the big family around and kind of doing all the end of the year catching up and stuff that you do, but in the way, it's actually made me really, really hungry for this year. Like, I've been sitting kind of around the apartment, and I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready to get this thing kicked off.
My gosh. I mean, you've been, like, relatively busy over the last few months. You know, you've been traveling, you've been doing commentary and such. I haven't been on an airplane since March, and I'm somebody that typically flies, I don't know, probably 30 to 50 round trips a year.
Yeah, you fly more than I do by a significant margin.
I'm probably overstating it when I say round trips. 30 is too many. I probably fly twice a month. So like, let's say 20 to 30. And yeah. But anyway, like for me to go from that to nothing is, I'm just stir crazy, to be perfectly honest. I really want to go somewhere. I want to fly somewhere. I had a bunch of vacations that I was hoping to take this winter that have been canceled because of the pandemic. So, oh man, I'm really excited to get back out there.
We're just gonna keep on hoping people get vaccinated and all that good stuff so that we can hear nothing but good news. The next 60 days are so crucial, not only obviously for the country and how our 2021 is gonna look, but for disc golf. I mean, it's so weird. I want to be like, yeah, it's a new year. It's 2021. Let's go. But the calendar rolled over, but we're not necessarily dealing with a whole different slate of problems than we were 6 months ago when we were, you know, getting into the tour restarts and whatnot. So the more things change, they kind of stay the same. It'll be interesting to see.
I know. I mean, and there's still, you know, questions hanging over the season a little bit. I have no doubts about the large majority of the Elite Series this year, but I don't know what's going to happen to Worlds. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Right now, if Worlds was happening, you know, next month, it would be canceled. And we're looking at June, and I don't know. You know, a lot of mainland Europe is not going to be vaccinating their sort of young, healthy populations until at earliest second quarter of 2020, and I've heard as late as, you know, the middle of the summer, or even in some cases into the fall. So what's that going to mean for travel? What's that going to mean for, you know, quarantine rules and travel rules between the United States and other countries? There's a lot of travel still very shut down. So I don't know. I have questions about that. I have questions about the European swing of the tour, which is like right in the spot on the calendar where you think, okay, hopefully we'll be ready to go by then, but it doesn't feel like a guarantee. You know, I hear people talking to pros. They're like, well, I can't wait to go to Europe. I'm like, well, I want to go to Europe too, but I don't know if that's going to be a thing. But today we're going to focus on not thinking about how the coronavirus is going to impact stuff. And we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to do some 2021 predictions. We got to catch up on a ton of player sponsorship news. And, we're also going to take a look in our subscriber bonus segment at the PDGA Disc Golf Pro Tour partnership and really dig into that and what it means about the future. Before we get to all that, though, first of all, I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday season.
Yes.
It's great to be back with you. We hope you enjoyed our roundtable discussions about the future of both live and post-produced media. I really enjoyed those conversations, Jamie. It was great to catch up. And, you know, there's been some discussion on social media a little bit about it. Brody Smith was a little irked at some of the things that we heard from Derek and Jonathan on the post-produced media show. But you know what? It's good to have that back and forth.
Interesting. I missed that.
Jamie. It's on Twitter.
I know. I'm that old guy. Like, I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on TikTok. Get off my lawn. give me and all the other people living under rocks these days like the 15-30 second here on this beef.
I wouldn't really call it beef. I mean, we heard from Brody here on the show a couple weeks ago.
Impossible meat. What's
no,
the impossible
No surprise
meat?
To see that he's sort of against the idea of allowing post-production teams to cover the lead card, which, you know, comes at the expense of live, you know, viewership potentially. So I think that's what he was reacting to. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
He's got his camp. It's so funny. Yeah. Like, Brody came into the game like a year ago and he's already found his live versus post-production camp. Isn't it funny how disc golfers kind of just sort themselves into one of the two?
Oh man. So we just posted yesterday the 2020 world rankings. So just a little quick backstory. Normally the PDGA every year publishes the world rankings. And it takes into account a bunch of things like rating, how you did at the national tour events, how you did at worlds, so on and so forth. Some stuff gets dropped, some stuff gets moved around, and they come up with a big ranking. Boom. But they didn't do it in 2020. And they're not going to do it because it basically, the system that they use wouldn't really make sense in a year in which there was no national tour, there was no worlds, and the European players didn't compete in the US-based Elite Series for the most part, except for the first two Pro Tour events. So that kind of sucks because it's obviously nice to have an objective ranking of players. So we built one. And I worked with Aaron Howard, who's the resident statistical whiz at Old Hero Disc Golf. And we came up with a world ranking. It's actually very simple. It takes a look at how players did relative to their peers at the Elite Series events in 2020, which included, you know, the USDGC, all the Pro Tours, Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship, and all of the Elite events in Europe. The big, you know, the Prodigy Disc Pro Tour events. And it just throws those results in, adds up all the scores, ranks the players. And with even this very simple approach, which didn't look at player rating, didn't give bonuses for doing better at USDGC, didn't do any time decays or anything like that, just said, how did you do relative to your peers at the biggest tournaments? So anything, you know, other A tiers, B tiers, C tiers, none of that stuff matters. How did you do in 2020? Rank. Honestly, it came out pretty good, I would say. Your number one players, according to this system of ranking, Paige Pierce, no surprise there, Calvin Heimberg. And I think the interesting thing to note about Calvin Heimberg, who finished ahead of Paul McBeth, McBeth was number two, is that Calvin Heimberg basically beat out McBeth because Paul McBeth didn't play in the preserve and Calvin did. Calvin's scores on a per tournament basis were nearly identical to Paul McBeth's, but you got more points accumulated by playing in more events. And so if you're looking for something to flip one side to the other, Heimberg versus McBeth, there's arguments on both sides. Maybe that's one that you could use in this objective system. He came out on top.
You play to win the game. And if you're at more tournaments, it makes sense to me. I was actually expecting you to say the difference in McBeth and Heimberg being that McBeth didn't make the finals in the Pro Tour Championship and, you know, got booted from that.
I mean, that's already captured in the rankings. So right, I mean, right. You know, maybe that played in as well. So I'm certainly had McBeth played better there and finished ahead of Heimberg, that could have been enough to make the difference.
Well, the thing I like about this is if you look up at the FPO World Rankings, Paige Pierce, obviously number one. Okay, if we got that one wrong, then we may need to retool the formula based on what
the
we saw
rankings might not be right.
But we're good there. FPO looks really good. I'd be interested to know, I don't know if you know off the top of your head here or have notes, but the Katrina Allen versus Haley King, I'm wondering Katrina being in second and Haley being in third on our world rankings here. Is the difference there just the win during the regular season versus kind of the stratified format of the Pro Tour Championship as well? Because notably, Haley King, of course, is the 2020 Pro Tour Champion, but Katrina Allen did get the win at Ledgestone and I believe did finish higher at the US WDGC in Rock Hill.
Yeah, so keep in mind, again, there was no bonus given for stronger performances at the Women's National Championship or the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship.
Just tier status.
Right, they were included in this calculation. Here's the thing. Why wouldn't we include a bonus? You might be asking yourself that. The thing is, one of the things we had to consider, and basically the reason the PDGA isn't doing rankings this year, is because the European players did not compete at these Elite Series events in North America. And so if you add additional weight to USDGC and or the Pro Tour Championship, which, you know, you could clearly make an argument for that, the problem is that necessarily punishes the Europeans who were not able to play in those events. So one of the things we had to consider was, how do we make sure that the Europeans are being considered enough to not, you know, penalize them too much? And I would say they're already being penalized because they were not playing in as many events. And I mean, kind of is what it is. It's not really their fault. But at the same time, they did play in fewer Elite Series events against generally worse competition. So here's your top 10 in FPO. Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Haley King, Sarah Hokum, Missy Gannon, Evelina Salonen, Heather Young, Henna Blomroos, Jessica Weiss, Ellen Widboom. That's your top 10. Now, Evelina Salonen and Henna Blomroos, by rating, are like number 3 in the world, tied. So why are they lower on this rankings list? Well, again, it comes down to the fact that they didn't play as many events. And so we had to find a balance. If you do a time decay, if you add additional points for playing well at the majors and the Pro Tour Championship, things that would make sense in a normal year, that's going to continue to punish the European players. And when we originally ran rankings based on sort of our power rankings algorithm that we use, the European players were like down in the 20s.
Nowhere in sight.
Yeah. So that didn't make sense. We had to throw that out and simplify for this year. So, I mean, there's no way to do this perfectly. But, you know, Haley King actually got... We also looked at not including the Pro Tour Championships because it's a non-standard, non-stroke play format. But that left Haley King what felt like way too low, and it felt like it was throwing out this really important tournament. So we included it. I mean, that did come at the expense of European players, but again, you have to find that balance. So I think Katrina Allen just had a more consistent overall year. Could you make the case that Haley King deserves a higher spot in a subjective ranking? You could. You could. But I personally feel like that's the right top 3 in that order.
I really can't fault this. And some people are going to push back. Look, some people are just going to say, oh, this is my favorite player, they should be ranked higher. And that's fine. Be a fan. You know, debate it. Talk about it. That's the point of the rankings. But when you look at... And again, I want to reiterate what you're saying, because I agree with you here. Like, this is not who's the most skilled player. We're not saying that Ellen Widboom at 10 definitively has more skill than Lisa Fakus at 11, for example. That's not the point of this ranking. This is to look back across all of 2020, try to take out the recency bias that affects all of us, and say, by the year, by what was on the books.
Bingo.
And yeah, that's going to hurt the European players, but it's also the lesser of the two evils, because there's a reason that the European players are coming to the States for the highest level competition.
Right.
It's not always going to be like that, but that's just how it was in 2020, which is what this captures.
And here's the thing. I mean, I saw a lot of people being like, how is so-and-so not higher? You know, name a player. Simon Lazat is not in the top 25 in the men's. Why? Well, he missed tournaments, and he didn't play well in tournaments at times. He was, I mean, at USDGC, he played terrible, and then he skipped the Pro Tour Championship. Sure, I think we can all agree that Simon Lazat is in the 25 most skilled players in the world. That's not even a question. Mm-hmm. But in 2020, does he deserve to be in the top 25? I don't think so. I think that the algorithm here captures that correctly, that he didn't have a good enough 2020 to be in that top 25. And he was dealing with an injury. There's a lot of reasons why that was. But the thing is, if you want to look at skill, we have a tool for that. It's called rating. We already have that.
I was about to bring that up. Yep.
We don't need to make another list based on the rating. Like, that's boring. That's not interesting. We want to know who played the best in 2020. And I think this system does a pretty good job. Here's your top 10 in MPO, Jamie. And then you can react.
Hit me.
Of course, I lost the tab. Here it is. Okay, number one, Calvin Heimberg, Paul McBeth, Ricky Wysocki, Eagle McMahon. Okay, so far so good. Kevin Jones, Chris Dickerson, Nico LoCastro, Garrett Gerthy, Paul Ulibarri, and Austin Hannum, rounding out at number 10.
The people that won on tour are up top. It's hard to argue. I mean, when I look at the winners on tour this past year, top seven, they all got wins. So, yeah, I mean, here's how you know it's capturing what it's supposed to capture. Going back to the ratings versus rankings thing, Paul Ulibarri reshared it, and of all the touring pros that I've heard talk about ratings versus rankings, I think he's the most consistently, I don't say vocal in the sense that he's like always talking about it, but his point of view has always been super consistent in that he says, I don't care about ratings. I want to know how I rank against the best in the world. And that's a really good way to think about this list. It's not, again, it's not about who is the most skilled. It's about in a year where if you think about it from like a Ulibarri perspective, if you're 1020 to 1040 rated somewhere in that range, you don't care who is technically more skilled, who has three higher ratings points or five less ratings points. You care how you finish in the tournament that weekend and what kind of money's coming into your bank account and what kind of glory comes with holding that title. That's all you're caring about. You don't need to think about ratings. You need to just worry about how you stack up this year, because if you're out there thinking, oh, Eagle McMahon is 5 points more skilled than me, there's no way I can win this tournament, I should just try to get behind him, then what are you doing? So for me, I like it. Heimberg, McBeth, player of the year candidates that we argued over, they still ended up in the top spots. The Saki Bomb back on the podium. You've got Eagle right there. Interesting that Eagle with the two wins beats or finishes behind Ricky with the one, but that probably has to do with the average finish, I would guess. And then you've got Kevin Jones and Chris Dickerson, and then Nico LoCastro. Top seven win it. I like it.
I don't think there's any question that top seven is correct. I think you can quibble with Chris Dickerson being at six. And I think the thing about Chris Dickerson, so why is he at six? If you look at how he played in the Elite Series events in which he competed, he played amazing. You know, even in tournaments where he wasn't really in contention to win, he always had such a good day in the final round that he typically finished top five. And of course, he won USDGC, made the Pro Tour Finals. So why is he at six? Well, it's simple. He didn't play all of the Pro Tour events. He skipped three or four, I think. So, you know, he plays a ton of tournaments, but we didn't include the A tiers, the B tiers, the C tiers, all the other stuff that he tends to go and play. By rating, I think you can certainly say he should be higher. By sort of the subjective feeling about the season, you can say that he should be higher. But at the end of the day, if you're going to skip Elite Series events, especially in a year when a lot of people are playing all of them, that's going to cost you when it comes to 2020 season rankings.
I wonder if it'd be beneficial to have like number of qualifying rounds as a second column, or like number of qualifying events, whatever makes more sense. But to show that like it's not a slight to Chris Dickerson that he's in sixth. It's a tip of the cap because his number of rounds on tour is going to be less than Nico LoCastro's.
Correct.
It's going to be less than Garrett Gerthy's, who he finished ahead of both of those guys. You know, there are people that road warriored that thing all year and they did not crack the the top five or six or top 10 even. So I'm wondering if that little bit of context would also help, you know, repeating this for 2021, for example, because it's definitely easy to read the chart different ways, but I see it in this instance as a very positive thing. I'm like, wow, you know, he didn't have to play the whole slate of events. He still gets the US title, which lives in glory and perpetuity. And he still made a name for himself this year, despite it being hard to do so in MPO.
Totally. And, you know, I think if you show up and play as well as he did at the biggest events, no matter what else you did in the whole season, people are going to remember that. I mean, they both happened right at the end of the year. He had that strong finish to the season. I mean, it would be a totally different story. You know, if he hadn't won USDGC, let's say he collapses completely down the stretch. You know, Calvin Heimberg almost caught him. He collapses down the stretch and he ends up losing by a stroke to Calvin Heimberg. I don't think anybody's talking about him being, you know, would anybody blink at him being sixth? That goes to show you how much importance we place on winning, as we should. So, you know, a subjective evaluation of players in a season is going to take into consideration that narrative in a way that a cold algorithm is not. So anyway, always glad to get your thoughts. We tried to find a nice, simple approach that would allow us to get some, you know, some European representation as much as we were able. By the way, two European players made it into the top 25 in MPO. Vinyl Makala at 17, Albert Tom at 23. So let us know what you think. Upshot at ultiworld.com. All right, so let's move on here. And Jamie, I'll let you pick. Do you want to do our prediction segment now, or do you want to rate the off-season moves?
Let's wrap up 2020 and then get into some predictions.
Okay.
Let's put the bow on this thing.
Let's do it. All right, so...
We've been promising this for a while.
This is
like the comprehensive hot stove.
This segment is tough. I mean, because a lot happened since we last had a show. I don't even think we're really going to be able to go through all of the details. I'll hit some highlights, and then Jamie, I'll let you add on if you feel like I missed anything.
Yeah.
Biggest news that we've had since we last discussed this. Thomas Gilbert announces a 2-year deal with Prodigy. So that's a, remember, he left Innova and it wasn't clear where he was going to end up. It's Prodigy. Austin Hannum also lands at Prodigy. That's less of a surprise considering that he's dating Katrina Allen, also for 2 years through 2022. So Hannum moved from Discraft to Prodigy. We're still waiting to hear where James Conrad's going to end up, but let's be honest, there have been a lot of tea leaves that point to MVP. His van was in the parking lot there. He's been seen throwing MVP discs. I don't really think this is going to be much of a, you know, big surprise when the news eventually comes out, but it's still unofficial.
He's going to be somebody's most valuable plastic thrower.
I think that's right. What else have we heard since the last time we talked? Alexis Mandujano leaves Innova, signs with Discraft. Her sister Valerie is still at Innova. In fact, got a promotion at Innova. So the Mandujano sisters split up. Ellen Widboom re-signs with Innova. Drew Gibson is going to be doing more with Infinite, but drops his legacy sponsorship. Kyle Klein re-ups with Discmania. Trying to think what else. I mean, I feel like that's the biggest stuff. Am I missing anything, Jamie?
I do think those are the biggest ones that have come out. Obviously, the fresh drop today is the one you really want to talk about.
Oh, of course. We literally just published that Nico LaCastro is extending his Westside contract for 2 years. He was actually signed through the end of this year, 2021, but signed an early extension. And we're going to talk more about the early extension trend that we've seen. But before we do that, I think it's a good time to zoom out, Jamie, and just take an overall look at what happened. Primarily, we saw extensions this year. That was the big news. There were not that many notable moves. You had Trevor Harbolt going from Discraft to DGA. You had Hannum going from Discraft to Prodigy. Thomas Gilbert going from Innova to Prodigy. And then like some smaller level players. But like broadly, at the top tier players all were either under contract or re-signed with their current sponsor.
Yeah. Innova leads the way there. 11 extensions on the books in the 2020/21 offseason. And yeah, I mean, let's dig into this. Look at what we've seen for the past couple of years. It's been big, splashy moves. It's been the normalization of multi-year contracts going back to 2018 and the Macbeth, you know, shock the world move to Discraft. Some other things were to follow. Discraft been in the spotlight pretty much the past 24 months straight with the moves they've been making and the investment and sort of the culture shift that's happening at that company. This year, it's a bit of Prodigy making their move. They're leading the way with ads. They've got, according to, and if you guys want to follow along at home, by the way, we're using our sponsor tracker that's on discgolf.ultiworld.com. So just follow along there. That's who we're talking about. It may not be 100% comprehensive list. It's what we know about and what we've been able to report on. But Prodigy is kind of pulling the Discraft of the last couple years. They're taking their turn in the spotlight to add a bunch of players. I mean, it's also notable that Austin Hannum was a touring partner with Kevin Jones over at Pro Discus, for example. So Austin Hannum going to a place where he you know, has more ties. You've got them taking some of the FBO team from Innova. Sandy Hendel, who may have actually not been Innova last year, but she was in the past, I believe. She's over at Prodigy. Sarah Sinclair moving from Innova to Prodigy. You mentioned Thomas Gilbert. That's another big signing for the future. So Prodigy kind of loading up and filling the cupboard here before the 2021 season. Everybody else is really just locking people down and trying to make sure that the long-term pieces of the puzzle for those brands stay repping those brands. We've seen a lot of extensions and Charlie, quite a few early extensions too.
Yeah, I want to get back to that in one second, just to stay on the Prodigy point for a moment.
Yeah.
I have to say, I feel like Prodigy overall has to be declared the winner of the offseason, just in the what they've been able to do. They extended Chris Dickerson. This was months ago now, but they extended him for 3 years. They add Thomas Gilbert, who is a very promising young player out of Canada. Prodigy's been very aggressive in their promotion in Canada. They've signed a lot of Canadian players, and they're really pushing for the growth north of the border. And clearly, Thomas Gilbert, the most visible touring Canadian player in MPO, a big part of that. And, you know, Thomas wasn't going to be making a change. He was planning on staying with Innova, and Prodigy put enough pieces together in a contract for him that he agreed to make the switch. Obviously, they pick up Austin Hannum, who's coming off of being ranked in the top 10 in our world rankings for 2020. Was at the, you know, on ESPN2 for the finals of the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. Pretty good season for Austin Hannum and a nice pickup for them. They also extended Heather Young early. So she's signed through 2022. Got to be the most promising young FPO player in the United States. I mean, I don't think there's a question. I mean, she's continued to get better. I mean, she's competing at the very top, despite the fact that she's still a teenager. And then they, you know, they extend Sipapayu, they extend Kayla LaVisca. I feel like Prodigy has kind of silenced questions that were swirling a couple of years ago when a lot of players notably left the company. You know, now that they have Chris Dickerson and Kevin Jones, Heather Young under contract, Katrina Allen, they have a really strong team and they've added depth this year.
Very important point there. And I think that it is a great turnaround because just a couple years ago, you wondered with the players that were leaving, is it disc sales that are flagging? Is it that the equity promise to the original players who came over to start the team and start the company Is that not profitable? You know, you start to wonder about those things. But it seems like, and this is completely on the outside, no inside info here, but it seems like, in hindsight at this point, it was just a case where they went too big too fast. But they were able to course correct. When some of the other names left, it was much more clear who were the standout players. Who are your flagship players at Prodigy? They learned probably an expensive lesson, but an important lesson that all sports teams know. And as much as I hate talking about disc golf as a team thing, because it's an individual sport, when you look at it from the business perspective, you can compare it to team sports when you think about things in the NBA or the NFL, like jersey sales, like who are people coming to see? And by coming to see, maybe we're not talking about an arena full of spectators, but we are talking about your YouTube channel. We're talking about whose name is on your signature disc, and is that going to move the disc more or, God forbid, less? So from the business perspective, you can draw some comparisons to some team sports and organizations in that way. And I just think they had too many star players. They had too many people that they couldn't adequately promote. And you had a bunch of people who were kind of the same touring generation who all were vying to be the top dog. Now, Prodigy just makes so much more sense when you look at the team. Who are the standouts at Prodigy? Go ahead and tell me, Charlie. It's pretty clear, right?
I mean, I feel like I just named them. It's, you've got Katrina Allen. You've got Kevin Jones. You've got Chris Dickerson. And then you can go deeper from there if you want.
Yeah, Heather Young.
Heather Young.
Those are the
Austin
four.
Austin Hanum, Thomas Gilbert.
Yeah. And you can think about those. If you think about a Chris Dickerson and then you look at a Thomas Gilbert, those two brands aren't in competition with one another. Chris is the U.S. champion now. And he's the dude right now. Thomas Gilbert is going to try to peak after Chris Dickerson and become the next dude. Katrina Allen, she's the one right now. Heather Young could be the next one. But it just makes sense. They have people positioned in windows better now in terms of where their career currently is and what their possible trajectory is. And I think that's going to give a lot of fans a lot less trouble in kind of like following the brand and supporting the brand and things like that when you zoom out. So that's my long-winded way of agreeing with you that Prodigy is the big winner, but it goes deeper than just the names on the bench.
So the online consensus is that this year's loser is Innova. And Innova does have the most departures of any company, 7. And that's, in a year where there were not a whole lot of departures. The next highest was Discraft, who had 2 players leave. So that seems like a lot. Wow, 7. I think it's a little bit overstated, I have to say. Innova extended all of their most important players. Nate Sexton, early extension through 2023. Calvin Heimberg gets an extension through 2022, early extension. They still have, I would say, I think it's an argument between Innova and Discraft for who has the better FPO team. Innova has, the top European players. Obviously, Discraft has Paige Pierce and Haley King. But, the reason Innova had the most extensions and they had the most departures. Why is that? Well, because they have by far the most sponsored players. So
it's not close.
It's not close. So, when you look at, Let's look at who left and discuss that specifically. So they lose Alexis Mondujano. They lose James Conrad. I think James Conrad clearly the biggest loss. They lose Madison Walker, Sarah Sinclair, Scott Withers, and Thomas Gilbert. Those are the notable ones. So I think, James Conrad, Thomas Gilbert, okay. Those are pretty notable. Everybody else, I'm sorry, maybe that those people, those are good, very good pros, no question. But when you're talking about people at the very top who are really moving the needle for Innova, none of these players come to mind. I think the fact that James Conrad is leaving tells me that he feels like he wasn't getting enough from Innovah. But the fact that Innovah wasn't willing to give him more perhaps is a sign that he doesn't necessarily move the needle that much. And let's take a look. James Conrad has gotten a lot more active on social media in the last 2 weeks than he has been in the last 2 years. Why? Well, you have to be marketable. You have to market yourself as a player. You have to sell discs for your manufacturing sponsor. This is not free money. So I have no idea what the internals look like. But the idea that Innovah is like somehow bleeding all this talent, I don't think that's really true. When you look at the actual most important, most visible players who really seem like they, you know, are on the lead card all the time and are active on social media, all those things, all of those players have been signed to extensions even before their contracts were up. So I think, I don't really know that any player lost this offseason, any company. To me, Prodigy did well to get some of the few free agents that were available who were not signed to extensions. And other than that, I think it was kind of just a pretty neutral offseason for most companies.
What's the difference between James Conrad and Nate Sexton? They both have one U.S. title.
Yeah.
Conrad has more wins on tour.
Conrad played a lot more in 2020.
Neither of them finished in the top 10 in the 2020 Ulti World Disc Golf Power Rankings. I mean, that's a little duh statement for Nate, but James Conrad was in 12th. So here's the thing. James Conrad, it might just be a victim of circumstance, but it's probably going to work out for him. From a personal perspective,
100%.
It's going to work out for him. It's going to work out great. If he goes where we all think he's going, that it's a stellar move.
It's a stellar move. For both sides.
Yes, 100%. Sexton, on the other hand, didn't play in the season. If you're comparing their credentials, they're not that far apart in terms of big career. You know, like looking at the long term of their career. But you mentioned the social media thing. If you don't get it done on the course, then you better be getting it done on social media. And I don't think any of these companies are putting social media above on-course play. I don't think that that's a thing. I'm not trying to suggest that.
If you go out and you dominate and you win, you know, half the events on the Elite Series in a year, and you don't have any social media accounts at all, guess what? You're still going to sell a boatload of discs for your company.
They're going to pay to send somebody to come film you and make your social media for you if you're winning that much because you're moving plastic. But Conrad didn't have a good year. And Conrad didn't have a good year in a contract year.
It's a good point.
And everybody here that's listened to ESPN before knows what that means for any sport. But it's going to work out for him.
Julius Randle's playing out of his mind for the New York Knicks. I'll take it. Contract year.
Contract year is important. And the stakes were high for Conrad being the defending U.S. champion coming into 2020. And he didn't perform, but he's going to be fine anyway. So I think that's what you really have to key in on if you want to try to look at the overall and see who's the big winners and losers. I think it's a mutually beneficial party.
I mean,
Colling didn't go anywhere. Sexton didn't go anywhere.
Right. Calvin Heimberg.
They got the social media part. Heimberg did it on the course.
Right.
So it's a no question for him.
And I think the other thing is, here's the thing I would say. Innovah is the default company from which to get sponsored. If you're a player who's really good, you're probably going to get some kind of offer from Innovah. I mean, I don't know exactly what their process is, but I mean, they have like five different tiers of support, each of which has 10 plus players. I mean, they have a lot of sponsored players, far more than the other companies, particularly at the kind of like pro levels where people are on tour. So that's great. I mean, it's, you know, there's a reason Innovah does that. They're the biggest company. They have the most to spend on that, on marketing, on everything. And so that works out great for lots of players. And the thing is, if you're a James Conrad, right, you're a player who's like in the top 25 without a question. But let's be honest, he's behind a number of his teammates in terms of skill. in terms of social media, in terms of, you know, just presence. And yes, there are going to be people who want to pick up a James Conrad Aviar. But if he goes to MVP as is expected, all of a sudden he's by far the number one player on the team. He's going to introduce tons of new people to MVP discs. They may not have a single one in their bag. And it's just the impact of being the big dog at a slightly smaller company is massively amplified because, you know, people want to know what's going on with James Conrad. It's just, it felt like he was kind of, even though he was on the star team, he always felt like he just wasn't quite in the same spotlight. And part of that's his personality. And, you know, that's going to resonate with some people and not with others. But I think, you know, we're going to see a whole new thing. It's probably just, again, I think it's good for everybody involved. I think James Conrad's going to end up in a better spot. I think wherever he ends up is going to be very happy they signed him. I mean, the fact is, he's probably the biggest free agent this year.
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly the biggest free agent. And maybe one that people didn't expect, which is there's always been a little like second plot line throughout the last couple years of like the free agent you didn't expect
right
happened. But overall, Innova keeps a lot of their players. And that's, I think, again, that's the reaction to the last couple of years. A lot of teams are trying to lock up the people that they think are going to do well over the next 3 to 5 years, maybe, instead of thinking about it on a 1 to 2 year scale, because you might have a prodigy who comes in and gets opportunistic and snipes Austin Hanum. So now all of a sudden, retroactively, you have three players that made the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship card throwing prodigy.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
Yep. Now, and I mean, here's another example. Disc Mania didn't sign anybody notable this offseason. But you know what they did? They extended all their players. Egan McMahon extended for 3 years. Kyle Klein extended for 2 years. Colton Montgomery extended for 2 years. Casey White extended for 2 years. Sure. Like, is that a good offseason? Yes, 100%. They had one priority. Re-sign Eagle. They could have, you got to back up the truck and pay Eagle McMahon. And then you figure out everything else. And for them to not lose anybody and to keep such a promising young player in Kyle Klein, Casey White's been on the come up. Colton Montgomery won a Disc Golf Pro Tour event this year. I mean, look, that's a great offseason. I know they didn't add anybody and they desperately need to get a top FPO player, but that's still really solid. They have some promising up and coming players and two massively established, huge disc selling monster social media people in Simon and Eagle. That makes their brand. That makes their brand.
And exclusivity has always been, that's not the right word in these times. People kind of take that word a different way. But a selective approach to team building or roster building. A selective approach to roster building is how Discmania tends to operate. They don't go out and sign the biggest names all the time. They've had Eagle and Simon on the books for what, a decade or something. You know, they get these kids young. Kyle Klein, you know, Casey White. Wow, what an opportunity he had last year. You know, not to disparage the guy, but he showed up on Simon's vlogs.
That's why people know who he is.
Yeah, and I know that's not the real story, Massachusetts people and you know, people up in the Northeast. I know he's a great player in the region. But I'm saying that there are great players in every region. There are Casey Whites in every region. I could run down the list here in Northern California. He got an opportunity. He got on the vlog. He got the contract and he went out and won a tournament. So he showed it. And I do hear, I can give a little insight. I do hear from Discmania that they are trying to sign an FPO player, like a flagship FPO player in the States. So I expect them to do that because that it is now the standard. It's glaring at this point in time, starting 2021, that they don't have that person. Because every other team, maybe except Dynamic Discs. I mean, you can look at Cynthia Ricciotti. They might be looking at her to be the next Paige Hsu. Paige Hsu is still the person at Dynamic Discs. She's the flagship player, but she didn't have a great year. So The dynamic disc thing is a little bit in question. Everybody else has a strong FPO team, and it's been a focal point. So that is an area that I think Discmania is going to have to go out and add people in the near future. But it's not surprising otherwise to see them stay firmly in the we've got our team, we're going to extend them category. Which kind of really brings us to Dynamic Disc, is the last company we haven't really talked about. Cynthia Ricciotti, Logan Harpool, Miles Seaborn, and Sarah Gilpin all get one-year extensions. A little bit shorter extensions than we're seeing with other teams there, Charlie. Dynamic is probably the company that I would say is most poised 1 year forward from now to make the big splashy signing.
Well, I don't know if I agree, and I'll tell you why in just a second. But what I will say is clearly Dynamic Discs has kind of divested themselves from the spend a lot of money on player sponsorship dollars. And they market in other ways. And I, in some ways, I think that makes sense. When everybody else is zigging, you zag. At the same time, I think it would be very beneficial for them to have one or two really, really strong names, you know, on throwing their discs. But they've clearly prioritized other things, like creating a lot of content. I mean, they make more content than anybody else. They have podcasts, they have videos, they have all kinds of stuff for how beginners how to play. And that stuff reaches people, and then beginners maybe buy their discs and not somebody else. Because if you're a newbie, I mean, Jeremy Rusko came on the show and talked about it. If you're a newbie, you don't know who these players are. You're not likely to be like, oh, I want to throw the discs of such and such player, because you don't have any idea who they are. You don't watch yet. Like, you're just, you want to buy some discs to go play. Well, Dynamic is really focused on reaching that market. And it makes a lot of sense, because for a lot of people, the first discs they buy, they're probably going to buy from that company for many years going forward, right? There's huge customer lifetime value in getting players in the door early with a starter pack or their first disc or whatever. So, you know, there's no question, like, Dynamic Discs team, their sponsored team is just not that strong. I mean, you know, you go down the list in the world rankings that we just came out with, and you've got a couple of Latitude 64 players. Paige Shu is the only in the top 20. Paige Shu is the only top 25. And then you have Heidi Lane and Macy Walker at 22 and 24. In MPO, Eric Oakley, that's it, at 13. And there's some Latitude 64 players down the way. But, you know, that's just not what they've done. Now, here's why I don't think next year they're ready for the splash. Maybe give them 2 years, okay? The big thing is, because of all these extensions, and because of a lot of early extensions, players signing additional years on the contract that wasn't set to expire at the end of 2020, next year's player free agency class is tiny. I was just looking at the you know, the kind of like primary players that are going to be up for new contracts in 2021, and it's not a big list. I think Katrina Allen is the biggest name. Because a lot of the other players who were set to have their contracts expire in 2021, like Calvin Heimberg and Heather Young, Nicola Castro, they have all signed extensions. So you've got Katrina Allen, and then you got people who are on one-year contracts. But for the most part, players on one-year contracts are not the big names.
Quick fire question here. More likely, Katrina Allen makes it to the next offseason before announcing, or they do an in-year extension.
In-year extension.
I feel the same way.
After Austin Hanum signing, they're going to get a deal done. Maybe they've already got a deal done.
It's possible. But I can't imagine they let her go. I can't imagine they get close to her contract expiring. And maybe it's just because I can't imagine her leaving Prodigy. Like, she, of all the players that really gravitated to Prodigy, she has seemingly found a home there. And likes throwing the product and genuinely promotes the product and all that stuff. So to me, it's one of those ones, and this is just, again, speculating from the outside, but it just looks like one of those sponsor player relationships that's solid, So I would be shocked if they got all the way to this time next year and we don't have new contract, or at least know when she's signed through.
Agree. Totally agree. And don't get me wrong. I mean, there's still plenty of players that are good enough, especially if they come off of a big year, to be a big addition to a dynamic discs, for example. You know,
your point's well made.
Greg Barsby, Adam Hammes, Andrew Presnell. I mean, you never know. Like, somebody could have a big season and they're on a one-year contract, and then boom, you might have a chance to pick them up when they're, you know, coming into a strong part of their career. So, anyway,
your point's well made, and we may want to think about dynamic discs in context of a little bit of what we're going to talk about in the next segment. I'll preview that and then let people kind of draw their own conclusions. We should talk about West Side. It's Nico World. Here's the only thing we have to talk about West Side before we wrap this up.
Okay.
How big is it that Nico was left kind of dangling for a while with no, and then West Side came in and said, oh, okay, we'll roll the dice. And he goes out and gets a win. First year, he's motivated, his game looks good, and boom, an extension already. Because remember, West Side purged the team too a couple years back,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
So they are all in on Nico. Is that fair to say now?
And sure.
It seems like it's a really great thing.
It must be going well enough for them to sign an early extension. I mean, I don't have any sense, really. Like, it's hard to know. Without seeing internal sales figures, how are you going to know? But it can't hurt them. You know, he's going to be creating more opportunity for visibility for West Side Disc. I mean, on tour, is anybody else even throwing any discs from West Side in their bag? I mean, there must be some.
There must be.
Because like, they're part of Trilogy, so players who are sponsored by the other Trilogy companies probably, I mean, they have the option to throw West Side. I don't know if they do. It's just not I think it's fair to say that their products are not widely known. So having Nico talking about them in the bag, throwing them on tour, you know, winning, making great shots at the Preserve, winning a tournament. I mean, it's raising a profile of a company that's what they need. And I got to say, you know, there was not a whole lot of drama from Nico this year. I mean, there's his usual social media stuff, but I don't really remember anything like too crazy, except he putts so slow.
The best thing is when he got on the media day for the Pro Tour and just told the haters where they could
shove it. Oh, gosh.
That was
right.
The best thing.
Yeah, he's so been good. Doing that for years. I mean, you know, there's always a little of that, but there wasn't anything really crazy. Like, he didn't have some insane blow up and have to get suspended by the Pro Tour or something.
Right.
And so, you know, in that sense, like, that's always the risk with Nico.
Hey, he's had the best. We talked about it during the season last year. The best year he's had in maybe a decade.
He's played great. I mean, he was borderline player of the year conversation.
And you hit the nail on the head with the word visibility, because that's what it's going to bring to West Side. So, you know, not a big stack of names, a pretty splashy extension, but they could have waited till next year and just done a new contract. Probably to West Side's advantage, just to extend now rather than wait and get a request for more money, especially if he goes out and wins again.
Quality
move.
When you do these extensions, you're only negotiating with the player. You're not negotiating against the other companies.
Or other free agents.
Right. I think that's a big part of this. So it's going to be an interesting year. I don't expect a lot of drama next offseason. That's the last thing I'll say. Because of how many players are locked up through at least 2022, we're just not going to have that many players out there to be picked up in 2020, at the end of this year, in 2021. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, 2021 predictions coming your way. It's The Upshot. The Upshot is presented by Pound Disc Golf, makers of the best bags in the sport. Hey, look, it's a new year, 2021. We all need a fresh start. Make your New Year's resolution to get yourself a Pound bag. Why are you waiting? Why are you waiting? There's no reason to keep waiting. You're going to buy other cheaper bags. They're going to fall apart. You're going to have to buy them again. No. Buy a Pound bag, buy it once, get it for life, guaranteed for life. Now, starting on Wednesday, hopefully the 13th, according to Pound, their weekly drops of limited edition Octothorpes will resume. Head over to the PoundDiscGolf.com, get ready for the drop, and you got to be ready because they sell out quick. PoundDiscGolf.com, get yourself a brand new limited edition Octothorpe starting January 13th. Welcome back to The Upshot. It's time to make some 2021 predictions. And, you know, we'll have more specific tournament and tour-based predictions once we get a little bit closer to the start of the season. But big picture, what are we expecting to see in 2021? We're going to lay down some predictions right now. And I got one for you right away, Jamie.
Hit me.
The pandemic boom will continue for the foreseeable future. And at least through the first 6 months of this year, we're going to continue to see lots of new player growth, lots of interest, especially once the weather warms up across North America.
Okay. Yes, I like that you're bullish on this, but what's going to happen in 9 months? You gave me 6 months. That's pretty good. I'm thinking about like vaccine rollouts and things like that. And there is a big question in 2021. If you're following the stock market or just kind of following the trends of how the money moves around the country and around the world, are the industries that have boomed during the pandemic well positioned for when the pandemic part ends? COVID's going to be with us. We know that. It has changed life and it irreversibly. We're not going to go back to 2019, period. I hope I'm not the first person that anybody is hearing this from. Because that'd be a bummer. But it's going to be different. Is disc golf going to stay as popular and the demand going to stay as high when all these other sports open up? When you can go to NFL games on Sundays, when you can go to college football games on Saturdays, when you can go to concerts on weekends? You're bullish on this, Charlie. You think we're still going to continue to see this growth?
I think you're asking the hard question, Jamie.
I am.
I was hedging with my original prediction. I think we will continue to see disc golf grow, but I do expect as other activities reopen, as you know, you can start going to concerts, as you can start going to museums, when restaurants are back, everything. I do think we will see the growth rate slow back to a more, what I would call, sustainable level and not be quite as crazy as it was in 2020. Because let's just be honest, let's face it. A big part of the reason that disc golf did so well in 2020 is, number one, it's accessible in many places. Number two, you can play it outdoors, socially distanced. That probably should have been number one. Number three, it's cheap. That is a very powerful combination of elements that made it really popular during the pandemic. Because the fact is, there just weren't that many things you could do in the middle of lockdowns besides go outside and do socially distanced outdoor activities. Go to the park, go on a hike, play around a disc golf. And it's cheaper than golf. You know, people aren't going to go buy out a bunch of clubs and play golf. It's so expensive. It's a huge commitment. But, you know, to buy a starter pack of discs and head out to your local park and play for free, I mean, you're talking about $25 all in. So there's a reason that it's been blowing up during the pandemic. Now, the thing is, disc golf was growing before the pandemic. It's going to keep growing after the pandemic. Are we going to see this crazy growth curve? No, probably not. You know, some of the ultimate players who started playing disc golf are going to go back and play more ultimate, play less disc golf. Some of the people who, you know, picked it up because there was nothing else going on are going to start doing the other things that they enjoy doing, playing team sports or doing, you know, going to concerts, going to sporting events, whatever. So I don't think it would be realistic to say that you're going to expect to see this kind of like crazy, unquenchable demand continue to boom. But I do think we could see a continued higher growth rate than we did coming into the pandemic. I think that's possible. But it will level out more.
Here's the bear case for this. One reason that disc golf stayed very accessible during the pandemic is that a lot of authority figures in this country, and whether that be politicians, whether that be business owners, but whoever has the authority over the courses, I don't think they really knew what to do with them. Now, this pandemic caught a lot of people off guard. And the execution of getting our house in order through the year 2020 was terrible. And I'm sorry if anybody finds that political. I don't care. It was terrible, objectively. If I can say James Conrad had a underperforming season, I can say the U.S. underperformed in how we dealt with the pandemic in 2020. And part of that surprise last year, I think disc golf slipped under the radar in a lot of places. Now, I do think, I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying disc golf is not a great social distanced activity. It is one of the activities that fits, that hits a really narrow target. It's small enough footprint wise that you're not going to get thousands of people there for, you know, just casual rounds. I'm not talking about pro tour events or anything. And spread out enough that you can have, you know, safe facilitated play, all that stuff. But I think also we probably are underselling how under the radar we flew in terms of regulations, because I know a lot of other industries that don't feel like they were fairly treated in terms of how the policymakers saw their business versus what the business owners saw as day-to-day operations and how that gels with social distancing and CDC guidelines and all that stuff. So I do think, and this is not as strong, I'm actually with you personally, Charlie. I do think that the relative delta of growth pre-2020 and post-2020, I do still think that is relatively going to be higher. I still think we're going to grow at a faster pace than we were, but there are some stumbling blocks in the year ahead if we have things like variants or mutations of the COVID-19 virus that possibly vaccines aren't effective against, or if, I'm just saying the ifs that would trigger a shutdown, I'm not trying to panic anybody, but if we had to go back to shutdowns, will disc golf get treated the same way? I can't honestly say we would be like treated quote unquote better. Like we would have more open courses than we did in the 2020 iteration of shutdowns. Does that make sense?
Sure. I you know, it's hard to know. I mean, I think the relatively dispersed nature and kind of like out in the, literally in many cases, out in the middle of nowhere style of course, right, makes it so that it's just less visible. You know, Golden Gate Park isn't that. I assume that they had to close Golden Gate Park at some point, right? Didn't we talk about that? They had pulled the baskets.
They did. It closed for a little while. It has been reopened with pretty strict policies with mask wearing and mm-hmm. distancing. And the club put up a lot of infrastructure around the course to help with enforcing this with the Parks Department. Sure. So, but I think that's a great point, because if you're out in the rural area, likely your population density means your transmission rates are slower.
But not even that. Just like the literal courses are not, no one's seeing them. They're in the right. woods.
But
it's
I
like,
think
it's like
now
telling people they can't go on a hike, you know?
Fair. But with the visibility, it's on ESPN. Or it's on CBS True. Sports. I mean, all of these things are going to increase what your local city council member sees as far as information about disc golf, and then they're free to make their own conclusions. So I guess my point is just to say that there is a subplot where we still flew under the radar. Even though if you're listening to this podcast, you, like us, think disc golf is a pretty big deal. But the whole world may not necessarily be on our wavelength, and we may get hit in a second wave of shutdowns with more strict regulations.
I
hope to God not.
Yeah, me too. I mean, the UK just locked down again for until like the middle of February. So
yeah.
I don't expect that in the US for a variety of reasons, but it's a possibility, especially in more dense parts of the country. Now, let me say this. I think the next 6 months is also very important for disc golf because, number one, obviously you want to capitalize on the increasing demand, but you need to be ready to continue to meet the demand. Think about how bad the supply chain was the last like 2-3 months. I mean, you can't find discs. It's hard to get discs. Courses, you know, now that it's cold, it's not nearly as big of a problem, but courses were really crowded. The companies need to get it together this winter and get their stock up and add production facility. And I'm sure they're a little nervous about it, right? Because they're thinking, well, we don't want to add a ton of new machinery and new labor and then watch demand fall off in the second half of 2021 once the vaccines are here and then people stop playing as much disc golf. And that has to be a risk in the mind. But at the same time, the complete inability to meet the demand right now is not good, right? That's not something that's going to yield long-term growth. You need to be able to have products to sell to people, and you need to have course infrastructure available to absorb the number of players that want to be playing. And, you know, pandemic or no pandemic, if courses are super crowded, that's going to turn people off. So we have to figure out how we're going to deal with that. And this is an important time to think about it, because you want to take advantage of the fact that disc golf does have this big influx of new people, and you want them to stick around. You want them to tell their friends. And, you know, we talk about grow the sport. We have to build that infrastructure out. So, sorry, I don't want to go down a whole tangent here of that. We've talked about it before, but just wanted to put that out there. Jamie, your first 2021 prediction.
Let's shift it towards the tour. I think we're going to have a resurgence of some of the biggest names in the sport. I don't foresee us having a repeat of 2020, where in MPO we had four players tied for the most wins on tour, and I think it's going to be a more clear-cut picture, because one, I think it was a wake-up call. If you don't think Macbeth, Wysocki, and McMahon got punched in the mouth by not making the final card for the Pro Tour Championship and not being on ESPN, and I'm not saying like that their brand necessarily needs ESPN, but their brands, they want you to be the... If you're watching this for the first time, you don't think it just eats at them that like Bubba Watson and Rory McIlroy are tweeting about it and they're not on the card, given what they've done in the sport and how competitive they are at almost every event they enter? That eats at people like that. These are highly competitive. These are no different mentally, these guys, than a LeBron James or an Anthony Davis or somebody like that. They want to be the best. And so I think 2021 is going to set up very nicely for that bounce back. And I think there's another factor putting pressure on them. We're at a generational fault line. It was 9 seasons ago, once we get into 2021, that Paul Macbeth won his first world title. 2012 was when he won his first world title. There was a generational fault line around that time. When you look at the names 2011 and prior that won it, the Worlds, and you look at 2012 and beyond, with the exception of Greg Barsby, there's a generational fault line there. And we're sitting on the precipice of the next one right now. What we saw last year is a good indicator of what we're going to continue to see. And these young players are going to have to, one, break out of a pack and declare themselves the front runner of the next generation on this fault line. But that's going to put pressure on these guys, on the Rickies, the Eagles, the Simons, those people that we've been watching at the top for many years. I'm not going to say they can't play great golf well into their 30s and well into their 40s, because there's plenty of examples that prove that that can be done. But can they continue to win when every mistake means so much more, and the people that grew up watching them on YouTube are now on the card with them? There's a lot of pressure this year for those players, but I do think it's going to be a good year.
You better not put Eagle on that list. How old's Eagle? 23?
Eagle does feel weird being in there. his age versus how long he's been in the spotlight.
No, I totally get it.
For sure.
My point is that Eagle is not at his physical peak yet. And
great point.
Has... in a way, like, yes, he's been visible for a long time. That's just because he's that precocious. I think that Eagle is one of those players that is on that leading edge of next generation. It's easy to say, oh, Eagle and Paul are part of the same generation. I'm not really sure that's true. How much younger is Eagle than Paul? I'm actually asking that. I don't know it off the top of my head. 6, 7 years?
God. Every time you ask me ages on this podcast, I get it so wrong, and then somebody texts me, and you're like, dude, I want to say 5 or 6.
Yeah. So, are they in the same generation? Maybe.
Yeah.
Depends on how long Paul is great. You know, if Paul's great for another 8 years, 10 years, and is continuing to compete at the highest level, well, then yeah. I mean, they're probably going to be considered contemporaries. But if Paul declines in, you know, 2 or 3 years as he gets into his 30s, well, then it may just feel like Eagle was next. You know, it was Paul's era, Paul and Ricky, and then it was Eagle and Calvin. But the fact is, there's also like a bunch of great 19-year-olds. It's incredibly competitive. I actually don't know that I agree. I think, sure, you're going to see continued strong play from the top names who've been great, your Paige, your Paul, your Ricky. But I think that I expect more chaos and less obvious dominance as we move forward. And that goes for both divisions. I think FPO will continue to get more competitive. That will be enhanced by having the European players competing against Paige. I mean, don't forget, Evelina Salonen won Waco on the Disc Golf Pro Tour this year. She played in Memorial, got fourth. She played at Waco, got first. Like, if she played all the Elite Series events in the U.S., how many wins does she take away from Paige Pierce? The number is not zero. So I think we're going to see more mixing at the top, more like golf, where, you know, it's been a while since we've had a player who just straight up dominates the whole time, week in and week out, and wins over and over and over again. When's the last time there was a major sweep in golf?
Oh, in a single year?
In a single year.
Oh, I definitely can't pull that stat off the top of my head.
Come on, Jamie.
God.
I'm looking it up. The last modern Grand Slam.
Not career, but single year. I mean, I know disc golf is obviously 2015. I'm just filling
time. Right, right. So Tiger Woods almost did it in 2000. And 2001, I mean, it's kind of like an asterisk. He was the title holder at all four modern majors simultaneously, but he didn't win them all in the calendar year. In 2000, he won the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and the PGA Championship. And then in April of 2001, he won the Masters. But he never won them all in one career like Macbeth did in 15. So right. Are we ever going to see that again? No, I think it's highly unlikely. I think, you know, we're to the point where it's just too competitive at the top and there's too many good players and it's just almost impossible to play at your absolute best, as is essentially required in order to win majors, that many times in a row.
Another thing you have going for you in that, well, you could probably make it both, you can make the case both ways. But one thing to consider is the fact that as the tour continues to shape differently year over year, I mean, look at the tour the last 10 years. It hasn't necessarily been the same. And that's a little different than the PGA, which is, at least at the majors level, more established. And I think that when the dust settles on the tour structure and what events are the long time ones, I mean, think about the fact that we lose the Memorial off of the calendar for the Pro Tour this year. As this shift is happening, there's more opportunities for variables to be added in. You know, nobody would challenge Macbeth at the Memorial. They called it the McMorial. And it was kind of like the McMasters Cup for a while. Like, when you talk specifically about Paul, there are tournaments that he just dominated. And some of these tournaments are not on the radar anymore. So how does that affect who's going to win and how many wins by any individual in a single season?
It's going to be a lot of fun to find out.
That's for sure.
You know, the at the end of the day, 2000 was weird. Or 2000. 2020 was weird.
2000 was also weird.
2000 was probably weird too.
For very different reasons.
2020 was weird because we had so many fewer events. There were probably about half the normal number of Elite Series events and only one major instead of three. So it just feels difficult to evaluate, you know, when in a year with three majors, winning two Pro Tour events isn't as big of a deal, right? We talked a lot about, oh, winning two Pro Tour events, like there are all these players who won two. Yeah, but like what, you know, if Chris Dickerson had gone out and won all three majors, had they happened, then who cares how many Pro Tour events he wins, right? He's player of the year. It's done. So
that's a very good point.
What's going to happen in 2021? Well, we have to see. Like, there's way more tour. That increases the fatigue levels that players have faced. It means that the players are going to choose to sit out some events, probably. You have the whole European swing. We hopefully have all of the international players competing against one another at the big tournaments. And that it just the variance is going to go up because of all of those factors.
So easy to say. And I think we're on the same page here. Prediction for 2021, players are going to be more selective about which events they choose and which tour they prioritize. I'd be willing to say that.
I think so. I think the Pro Tour took advantage of its year in the limelight on its own and showed why it's important to show up to Pro Tour events. Because if you can get into the finals, if you can get into the championship, you're going to make a bunch of money. More than you're probably going to make by doing the best at the NTs.
This may sound biased coming out of me, but it's definitely a prove it year for the national tour. Like, prove that you still have the draw. Prove that people are going to register for the event, that they care about the title in 2020 and forward, the whole nine yards. And I think, you know, it's a sharp reversal from a few years ago where it was like, okay, world
the other
tour,
way around tour,
prove that you even need to exist. Like, why totally. Do we need you? And now, if the table hasn't completely turned, it's darn near close.
I mean, I think the thing the National Tour has going for it, the long history and great courses.
That'd be the 18th season this year. Should be the 19th season, but 18th because of the skipped year.
They're going to have to get to 20, impressive. Right? I hadn't even thought about that. We spent all this time talking about, is the National Tour going to go away and the Pro Tour is going to take over all of the Elite Series? If I'm the PDGA, I want to have a 20th National Tour, you know, 20-year anniversary.
20 is a nice round number.
It's a nice number. Good. Anyway, we're actually going to talk more about Disc Golf Pro Tour and PDGA in our subscriber bonus segment. And we're going to talk about the fact that the Pro Tour is going to be doing the live stream coverage from all of the NTs and the majors this year. So we want you to tune in and listen to that in our subscriber bonus segment. You can become a subscriber for less than $4 per month at discgolf.ultiworld.com/subscribe. We also have some very cool upshot news coming up. A few things. Some of it cool, some of it maybe not as cool. So we'll get into that in the next few weeks. Any other predictions, Jamie?
Just like the last couple of years, January and February, even though it's the off season, it's not going to be boring. That's been the most fun thing that I've seen in the last couple years, and I think that trend continues.
All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. We're glad to be here with you in 2021. Please join us in our subscriber bonus segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Jamie Thomas and Charlie Eisenhood, saying so long, and we'll talk to you next week right here on The Upshot.
See you.